welcome to Your Turn. Mike Clausey here. Delighted to have you with us. We're going to be talking about the new Self Plus One option that's available to families of two. And this is a brand new feature in the federal government. The Office of Personnel Management has extended. It is not correct to call it an open season, but it is an extended sign-up period. And Walton Francis, who literally wrote the book on federal health insurance plans, is going to be with us to discuss it and other things about the health insurance in detail. Unfortunately, because of Washington's infamous traffic, Walt is late. And here he comes in even as we speak. So Walton, it is here after all, and we're going to be hearing first from Tom Timmon. Tom is does, of course, the morning drive, and Tom, I heard you this morning talking about the budget and that sort of thing. Talk about the budget and that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, the budget is a big deal. In fact, yesterday my column at federalnewsradio.com said that New Hampshire Schmampshire, what really is occupying Washington attention these days, is the budget. And I think it's a mistake to say that the president's budget arrives dead on arrival, as they put it, $1.1 trillion for discretionary spending, $4-point-something trillion for all of the spending. It's not really dead on arrival. It's more like a great big Western omelet. And what's going to happen in Congress is somebody's going to pick out this piece of green pepper and that piece of yellow onion. But at the end of the day, if it's not $1.1 trillion, they'll argue over the $0.1 trillion, but not the trillion. So I think a lot of what the presidents want, they get.
Well, you know what, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is the first time I can recall that the opposition party, in this case the Republicans, have just said we're not even going to consider it. I mean, is that a first?
It's a first in a long time.
Yeah.
I don't think it happened between other transitions between party administrations like this. But, you know, the politics that overlay all of this are pretty rough this year, pretty tough this year. And so they're not going to get a hearing, but a lot of the individual appropriations committees that have jurisdiction over a particular department, those hearings are going to happen. So, I mean, they will get their hearing and there will be a budget because Congress wants to return. The Republicans in Congress say they want to return to normal order and have a budget on time and start in time for the fiscal year, which starts October 1st.
Now,
so they don't have all that much time.
I heard you and executive editor Jason Miller talking about the budget this morning, and the fact is, you referred to it as a huge budget, and it's going to remain that way. But the presidents never get even most of what they want, do they?
Well, they get most of what they want. I mean, the trimming, as I mentioned, tends to be around the edges. I mean, some things are probably not going to be that controversial. The administration is asking for $19 billion for civilian agency cybersecurity programs. That's not quite a doubling, but it's up by about a third, up by $6.6 billion. But given the cyber scene and what's been happening with OPM and some of these big data breaches, VA, IRS, probably Congress will go along with that one. Where you might get some more fights is over the military budget, which is up above what it would have been with sequestration before the budget deal, but it's still $17 billion less than they were hoping for. And so you see troop levels dropping. They could argue about that one. On the other hand, you see the famous A-10 attack plane that the administration has said, well, let's keep that going now until 10/22. So there's a very mixed bag in there. I think one of the big items that could get agreement on Capitol Hill in the Defense Department, big by civilian standards, not big by defense standards, but $6.7 billion they're asking for offensive cyber weapons. That is, we can zap the Chinese, zap whatever country we want electronically, just like Russia did before it went into Crimea, took out the internet. And so that capability could be coming to the United States.
It looked like the Navy was the big loser among the armed services.
Yeah, the Navy is losing whole wings, flight wings, and so forth.
And that's a carrier, like a task force, correct?
Almost. They're losing chunks of a task force. What they're getting is a policy that switches Navy forces more toward Asia, but yet they're not getting any more ships to do that. So, yeah, the shift to Asia is reflected in the discussion about the strategy for the DOD, but there's no real dollars. There's no new carriers. There is a lot of funding for submarine forces. And so what they're going to emphasize is not so much ships and troops, but electronic countermeasures, missiles, things that are a little bit more, I guess you might call it, bloodless than the old-fashioned land and sea wars that of an earlier century.
Right, and of course, obviously, Congress would have to approve this.
That's right.
I mean, it's not something the president can do unilaterally.
Heck no. Okay. It would be easy if they could do it unilaterally.
Well, and I'm thinking, too, you know, you had the heads of the various intelligence agencies on the Hill yesterday, and they gave a very pessimistic worldview. They're talking about, I think one of them said he'd been in the intelligence community for 50 years, and he had never seen things as grim and as many challenges we're facing. And they were talking about the fact that Libya is and Iraq are really still two very bad spots. And I see in the paper this morning that someone has said that the administration is about to take some kind of action in Syria after drawing a red line some time ago.
It could be. There's about something like $7 billion in the budget this coming year to take on ISIS. But if you read the analysis they are doing of what their strategy is, they are calling the coming years a return to a rivalry among great powers. Now, you know, since Gorbachev fell, we've been calling ourselves the only superpower. Mm-hmm. Now they're not saying Russia and China specifically are equal to the United States, but they're getting there. And so they're calling them great powers. And so the question is, how do you counter great powers? Well, again, troop levels are falling. Reserve levels are falling because they want to cut the cost of the military, especially the personnel costs and the out years costs. So you're not doing it with more people. So they have to do it with more electronics and more smart weapons and some more counterintelligence, those kinds of things.
Well, and you can imagine, too, looking at it from the Russian point of view, you know, Mr. Putin has a very big ego. He's a very powerful guy. He wants to return to the great days of the Soviet Union, and you have these former Warsaw bloc countries that are now in NATO. And from the Russian standpoint, they've always tended to be paranoid about this sort of thing, about being surrounded, because they are surrounded.
Yeah, the best thing going for us against Putin might be $30 oil.
Yeah,
because you know, that deprives him of a lot of the revenue that he needs to pay for all of this.
Yeah. Pay raise, 1.6% in it. And it's interesting, in many past years, federal workers have gotten a pay raise and the military has tacked on to it. It seems to have reversed now. This is a 1.6% military raise with civilians tacked onto it. Unions don't think it's enough.
Right. Well, they never think it's enough. Yeah. And I guess if you look at the cost of living over the past 8 years, in which three of those years were 0% pay raise, one of the years was 1.0%, and then last year was 1.3%, they probably haven't kept up. So Sean Donovan is saying, you know, the director of OMB, saying, well, 1.6% is the best we think we can get. We wish it were more, but I think realistically, Congress is not going to go for anything more than 1.6%. Also, they have left intact employee contributions to retirement. There's no gambit, at least by the administration, to up that one, which is always contentious.
Well, you know, during that three-year drought, the period when there was no federal pay raise, probably about half of all federal workers got a 2% raise at least once in that three-year period. That's the in-grade raise that people just really take for granted, and it occurs every one, every two, or every 3 years, depending on where you are in the cycle. So a lot of people haven't stood still.
Well, that's right. That's a good point, because maybe the scale didn't raise, but the people raised within the scale.
Yeah.
And also, there's plenty of bonuses to go around, too. That's always been the case.
Yeah, we had matching columns yesterday on the bonus subject.
Yes, looking at it from totally different angles.
Well, now, the unions are asking for 5.3%. That's the figure they've come up with. And I know Nancy Pelosi addressed an AFGE rally yesterday, and people were up on the Hill, National Treasury Employees Union. I mean, how realistic is that?
I don't think 5.3% rather is realistic at all. Yeah. I just can't see this Congress going for it. I don't even think a lot of Democratic members of Congress would really go for it, because, you know, it's just an expense. We should also point out that the administration is anticipating 1.5% increase in the federal workforce. So people like IRS, Office of Personnel Management, Veterans Affairs would be getting more employees to improve customer service, to improve the health care delivery that they get, to clean up the backlog of annuity claims that OPM has been facing. So, you know, 1.5% doesn't sound like a lot, but across the federal government, you're talking maybe 30,000-35,000 new people.
Yeah, and it's more rather than less. Well, it's interesting, too, that the split personality in this, the administration is calling for more people, particularly in the IRS, some presidential candidates are running on the platform, abolish the IRS, go for a flat tax or something, and others want to do away with the air traffic control system, fire 30,000 FAA employees. So the EPA is always on the hit list. Department of Health and Human Services is on some people's hit list. So very interesting situation.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the days when George H.W. Bush was running against Michael Dukakis, and Michael Dukakis said, "We need more people from the IRS to get all the revenue we're coming." And George H.W. Bush said, "I don't want a big bureaucratic IRS snooping around and stomping all over Americans." That was the time tenor then, not so much different now, 25 years later.
Right. And again, for this would be the third time if it happens. Some people are proposing privatizing some IRS operations, going after the real tax deadbeats. And it's been tried twice before, crashed and burned both times because of allegedly overzealous, you know, meaner than a junkyard dog, private debt collectors. But history seems to repeat itself.
Yeah, that they'll try. I mean, if there's a Republican administration next, they may try again at privatizing parts of the IRS. The FAA privatization actually has pretty good bipartisan support. That could happen.
Okay. Eric White's given us the signal here to all take right. a break. Tom, thank you for stepping in. Walton has arrived. Take a short break, and we'll be right back here on federalnewsradio.com. Mike Causey here. Welcome back to Your Turn. And the guest du jour, Walt Francis, is here, battling Washington traffic. Thank you, Walt, for coming in. Delighted to have you. And we're in a first ever situation now with the advent of this new Self Plus One health program, which people have been begging for and asking for years. But now it became a reality last year. Many people took advantage of the open season in November and December to sign up for, you know, a different plan. There was more action than usual. I think normally you say that only about 6% of the eligible people do anything during an open season. It was a little higher this year, apparently.
Yeah, but it was over 10%.
Yeah, that's a sea change. But the Office of Personnel Management decided that maybe they'd have one more crack at this thing and have a very limited, and it's not an open season, but have a very limited extended enrollment period, which runs through February 29th. Don't forget, this is a leap year, so February has 29 days this year. What is this extended period? What is it?
Well, it's what OPM decided was that there were so many people who might not have got the word about Self Plus One, or who, as usual, were couch potatoes and didn't think they ought to do anything in open season, that they'd give the lingerers one last chance to make what is for most people a money-saving switch. Not very much money usually, but a money saver, a few hundred bucks. We just talked about federal pay raises. Hey, a few hundred bucks in a year isn't chump change when you're only getting a 1.1 or 2 or whatever percent pay raise. So the month of February is the designated month. Every employee, we're talking about families of two. This could be a couple. It could be a single mom with one child. It could be a single dad with one child. Okay. But, you know, if you're
two people,
if your family has two people and you're currently enrolled in a family plan in the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program, you have the month of February to switch to the Self Plus One version of that plan. Now, the benefits will be 100% the same. There's no benefit change. The only issue is how much premium you're charged over the year. And about 90% of the plans, there's a saving. It's usually $100 or $200 a year, you know, 10 or 20 bucks a month. It's not a huge amount of money. With some, there are a couple where there's a lot of money you can save. And there are some plans where you'll lose money if you make the switch. So you have to, you know, do couple of minutes of homework. Okay.
Yeah. Now, well, can if I'm in one plan, in a family plan, can I switch to a self only in another plan, or must I remain in that plan?
You can't change plans.
Can't change plans.
Unless you have another reason, but not the self plus one is strictly staying in the same plan, switched down a level, so to speak.
The one I was in last year, or the one,
yeah,
I, and
the,
one
well,
I
the
picked.
One you were in as of the beginning of January.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
I mean, or the beginning of open of this plan year.
Okay, and I noticed what it was something you didn't say. You were talking about employees changing during this extended enrollment period. What about retirees?
Well, retirees, unbeknownst to most of them, have a better deal.
Okay.
They don't often have a better deal than employees, but in this one regard, they do. Retirees at any time during the year, not just February, can always switch down from family to self plus one. It's or from, for that matter, from family or self plus one down to self only. Okay. So you have a permanent ability to switch down a level if there's a life event, but you don't have to, in the particular case of self plus one, family to self plus one, there doesn't need to be a life event. Hey, you're a retired couple and you just realize, I could be saving, 10 or 20 or 30 bucks a month. Well, if you don't discover that until March 1st, it's okay. You can make your move in March or April or whatever. Employees, it's only the month of February. Now, of course, everybody next fall in open season has another chance, and there you can change plans. And of course, there are life events that let people change plans during the at any time that you have one. Getting married, getting divorced, just moving out of town, and you're in an HMO, you know, that's only local in this area. There are various things that let you change plans. But the February, the month of February, this is a special season. I won't call it open season. It's not open.
Not open.
It's a special self plus one switch season.
Okay. Now, I remember back in the day when they started this discussion about having a self plus one plan, the argument was from the very young and the very old. Young couples who did not have children, just husband and wife, they resented paying the same premiums as old Mother Hubbard, who had 26 kids and lived in a shoe. The older people whose kids had aged out, also, the retirees had made the same argument. They said, why should we, too, pay the same premiums as a family of 6 or 10 or 15? And I remember at the time, you and other experts in the field said, it's probably not going to make much difference, folks. Many people said, oh, we'll save tremendous amounts of money. And a lot of you guys, and correct me if I'm wrong, said you may at first, depending on the plans, but it depends on the selection process, who goes into these self plus ones. And if a lot of older people who are sicker and who use more of everything, if a lot of them switch into these self plus one plans, could be a wash, huh?
Yeah, it could even be, and indeed we already know.
You're seeing it here.
That the self plus one could be more expensive than the family enrollment. Now, people say, wait a minute, a family of 6 has got 3 times as many people as a family of 2.
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't they be 3 times as expensive? And the answer is no.
Yeah.
Because a family of 6, guess who's in it? Mostly little kids.
Yep.
Little kids are cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the family of 2, guess who they are? Well, a lot of them are a retired couple in their 50s mm-hmm. and 60s. And guess what? Older people are much more expensive. So it all depends on which group predominates, okay? And it happens to be the case that they pretty much cancel out. So self plus one is kind of, you know, hey, it doesn't make much difference, except it does in a few plans. So you want to be sure not to make the switch in the plans that are full of geezers.
Mm-hmm.
For example, and I don't mean this to criticize the plan, Kaiser High Option, not just at the D.C. Mm-hmm. one, but there's several around the country of the High Option. They tend to have a whole bunch of loyal retirees that have been in the plan all their life, and they didn't bother to sign up for Medicare Part B, because why do you need to sign up for Part B when you have Kaiser and you pay almost nothing out of pocket, you know, 20 or 30 bucks for a doctor visit, and that's about it. Well, if those, you know, 70 and 80-year-olds who don't have Medicare Part B are very expensive. And so those older couples who don't have Medicare are so expensive on average that they have brought up the price of self plus one in the Kaiser plans to the point where it's higher than the family.
Isn't that the situation, too, for Blue Cross Blue Shield, which is so popular with retirees?
They're actually a little – it would be, but they seem, unlike Kaiser, they have a higher proportion of retirees with Part B.
I see.
Okay. Uh-huh. So they are barely – cheaper in self plus one than in family. But it varies a lot from plan to plan. There's actually in the D.C. area this year one plan, and I can't, you know, it seems so strange, but the MDIPA plan, the family premium, is something like $8,000 a year. The Self Plus One premium is somewhere around $3,000 a year. So if you're a retired couple in MDIPA, you can save a cool $5,000 in premium costs, keep all the same benefits, and you'd better, you know, make your change this February.
Well, I remember you said that on an earlier show during the open season, talking about this save $5,000, and I couldn't quite grasp it, that it would be that much money. But I got a number of emails from people who said, guess what? Walt Francis was right. I am now saving $100 every pay period out of this.
Yeah. And of course, I hate to mention this online, but, you know, we do take a 10% cut of any savings.
Yes, absolutely. Send it directly.
Send it to Mike and we'll split it.
And make it cash, please. We don't want to bother with this. Your book, your guide to federal health plans, and your online version, this is the Bible for people. And it's so useful, and it shows, for people who are not familiar with it, the book shows what your premiums are, regardless if you have no doctor visits whatsoever. These are what your share of the premiums are going to be. And then it shows different scenarios, and then you have the average cost for singles, for families, for older people. It's extremely useful, and it's also helpful for people picking things like a flexible spending account to sort of get a handle on what their likely medical expenses are going to be. Now, this the online version, I know a number of federal agencies have paid for it for their people. They've subscribed to it for their people. And how can people find out if their agency has done it for them?
Okay. Well, whether your agency is subscribed or not, actually, on the Self Plus One issue, have I got news for you. Go to www.guidetohealthplans.org. That's all one word, guidetohealthplans.org. And there you will find checkbooks, guide to health plans for federal employees and annuitants. And if you subscribe, you get to actually see our detailed plan comparisons, the ones you were just talking about, taking into account, you know, whether your family is healthy or ill and what your expenses might be, where we try to estimate how much you're likely to save. But right there on the home page, we have the information you need to make a Self Plus One choice in February.
Okay, Eric.
Everybody has access.
Eric wants us to take a break here, but when we come back, I'll ask you some more about that. We'll be right back here on federalnewsradio.com. Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. Today is our selfie show, talking about the new Self Plus One option that's available to federal workers. And there's an extended enrollment period, not an open season, not an official open season, but an extended enrollment period. And Walton Francis, who is the longtime editor and author of the Washington Consumer's Checkbook Guide to Health Plans, is here to answer your questions and explain it. And Walt, earlier in the show, you said this is a deal where you can downsize, if you will. You can go from a family plan to the Self Plus One option, and in some cases save a huge amount of money, others not so much. But you can't switch from plan to plan. You can't go from family plan in Blue Cross and go to Self Plus One GEHA or something like that, correct?
No, you can't.
Okay.
That is, you can't, due to the fact that there's a February special enrollment deal. Okay,
yeah.
The selfie, I love it.
Right.
But there might be another reason why you could switch. For example, if you lost a child, gained a child, or whatever. But no, this is a one-time, without question, no matter if there's no other change, you are allowed to go from family to Self Plus One. Of course, this only applies to couples.
Yeah.
You can't go to Self Plus One if there's more than two of you.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you can, but then someone's going to lose coverage.
Okay. The bottom line, the basic thing is, okay, we have this extended period. I think a lot of people understand how it's going to work. In some cases, you can literally save $5,000 a year in premiums. In other plans, you'll actually wind up paying more under the self plus one than you would under the family for odd reasons. But how do people make this change? How do you do it? What do you push a button? Who do you call?
Okay, well, it depends on your situation. If you're a retiree, you do it by calling OPM at the special retiree telephone number, or you can go to the retiree website. They have a sign-in procedure, which, hey, if retirees should all know it.
Yeah.
You know, use your civil service retirement number and all that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of a bother, actually. It's not quite as smooth as it might be, but it works fine. And you then can, you know, do this. Remember, you're not, the retirees are not limited to February. They could make this change in March or April. Mm-hmm. That is family to self plus one. But there's many other reasons why a retiree couple might want to be at the OPM website. You know, they have other benefits. They have other things to deal with. For active employees, it depends how you make the switch to self plus one depends on how your agency handles FVHPP changes generally, okay? Many agencies, maybe most, are in something called Employee Express. And in Employee Express, you have a password and so on, and you can use that system to make the change. Or you can go to your personnel office, you know, and your HR people will have the form. The form is called Standard Form SF2809. That's the form you use to switch from family to self plus one or to make any other change. Now, the form itself is about a page long, and all the instructions, which are extremely complicated, are about 15 more pages.
Yeah.
And by the way, there are obsolete versions of this form all over the place that don't even include on the form the option to switch to self plus one.
Because it didn't exist.
Yeah. Because it didn't exist. Yeah. So you need to be sure and your HR people will have it figured out. How do you actually make this particular change on the newer version of the form?
Okay. Got a question here from David A. He says, our son will turn 26 at the end of March. Should we change to a self plus one plan now, or will this qualify as a life event that would allow us to change after his birthday?
I think the answer is either. Let me say first, you do qualify. It is a qualifying life event.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you are going to be able, in fact, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure you can change plans too. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So when he turns age 26, you'll get a special open season. And you can switch from family to self plus one and maybe even change plans. Not positive about that, but I think so. You could actually do it now because you can do it up to a month in advance. Okay. So,
if they made
the
change,
it says 31 days before the event, enrollees may enroll. I'm looking at standard form 2809,
right,
which is sort of the Bible of this kind of detail.
Right.
So, if he's going to age out on, it's unclear, end of March. Okay. So I think on February 29th, you could make the switch and it would be fine. Okay. I would, you know, wouldn't hurt.
Yeah.
So either way is okay.
Okay. All right. That's a good answer. When we go through this every open season, the government spends a ton of money educating people without advertising for anybody. You guys have this tremendous service. You sell the book. You sell the online version, and many agencies subscribe to it. Just in general, a lot of people this year are going to have a life event. They will maybe lose a spouse or gain a spouse or lose a child, as you said, or gain a child, but they will have a life event. Would that also include, for instance, is there an age life event? I mean, does turning 65 mean anything in this program? And I know moving to a different area can make a difference, can be a life event if you're in an HMO or something. Mm-hmm. But how does this work go?
Okay, I think there's actually so many different life events, qualifying life events. I mean, I'm looking at this form and they have event codes. I mean, it's page after page. But you mentioned age.
Mm-hmm.
When you become eligible for Medicare, which is at age 65, you do get a special lifetime enrollment change option, which you don't have to use right away. You can kind of save it, okay? So, you know, and 10 years later, use it to make a plan change out of open season. You can always change during open season, of course. So, in general, a qualifying life event, with that exception, is not an age event. Well, actually, that no, there's the other age event is you have a child aging out at age 26.
26, yeah. Okay.
So, if a family member, a child, ages out at age 26, that's an age-related qualifying life event. That gives you, you know, a special open season just for you and your family. And, of course, the child aging out, all by the way, doesn't – I mean, they can stay in the FEHEP in their own plan. And they have their own open season.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be the same plan as the parents. In fact, they're not allowed to be in the parents' plan anymore. But they'll have to pay the full premium.
And that's when you appreciate how much the government shares.
Yeah, that's that won't be just be paying that 25% enrollment share. They'll be paying the whole nine yards. In many cases, they will turn out to be better off, certainly if they're employed in an employer plan, they're virtually, without exception, they'll be better off, or because the employer pays most of the premium, or they go on one of the Obamacare exchanges, okay? Mm-hmm. And if they're low income and unemployed, they can get a pretty hefty premium subsidy there. So the age 26 year, you know, the 26-year-old child, I put that in quote marks, will have some choices and have to decide what to do.
One reason the federal health program is so good, and it is, I guess, considered the gold standard by most people, and it was sort of the model for Obamacare, but try to have this so good, is that members of Congress and their staff were included in it and have been since the program was founded. And, you know, many people suspect that this is why it's so good and the Congress has kept an eye out on it and the government pays the lion's share of the premium, 72 to 75% depending on variables. But it's a very good program. Well, Congress is out of it now, correct?
I would say they're half out of it. OPM whisked the magic wand. I don't know how they did it.
Okay.
In fact, a lot of people don't understand how they did it. Mm-hmm. When the congressman and it's their personal staff, their political staff, mm-hmm. not regular congressional employees who were sort of tenured, not committee staff, are still in the regular FEHPP, but the individual members of Congress and their political staff are no longer eligible to be in an FEHPP plan, but they can join a small business plan on the D.C. Exchange, District of Columbia Exchange. How OPM figured out to let them do that is beyond me. And those plans will cover your staff no matter where in the country they are,
mm-hmm.
which is another sort of strange thing, okay? And then the congressmen get the federal employer share contribution, okay? And so it turns out, it gets complicated because there's premiums that vary by age on the exchanges, but the younger congressional staff who are in this system actually are better off than most federal employees. The older congressmen are not. They pay a little more.
To quote Claude Rains in Casablanca, I'm shocked by this. I need to take a short break here. We'll be right back here on federalnewsradio.com. Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. I'm talking with Walton Francis. He is the editor and author of the Washington Consumer Checkbook's Guide to Federal Health Plans. And we spent a lot of time together during the open season helping people pick the best plan for them. It was an unusually busy open season, but even so, only, 10% of the people you said who could changed plans. And don't you have kind of a ballpark estimate that at any given open season, any given year, 20, 30, 40% of the people probably should change?
Oh, absolutely. More than that.
Uh-huh.
We know how many people are in each plan.
Mm-hmm.
We know which plans provide the better deals.
Mm-hmm.
And we find that the majority of federal employees are not in plans. Well, it's about half are not mm-hmm. in plans that are in sort of the top half of our rankings. So most employees miss out on spectacular chances to make, couple thousand dollars a year in savings. It's not chump change. And actually, while the self plus one savings are much smaller with in almost all cases, a couple hundred dollars. Hey, for anyone who's listening right now, this is a chance to save a couple hundred bucks this year if you didn't switch to self plus one during open season. Don't have to think about changing plans. You're not allowed to change plans. You're just allowed to make this one change from family to self plus one. Hey, give yourself a Valentine. Give your spouse a Valentine's Day present. Okay, make the change. You got to be careful that you're not in one of the plans where self plus one costs more than family. And you can go to our website. You can look at the plan brochure on the last page where they give the premiums. You can see if self plus one is lower than family, and if so, by how much per pay period. And you can figure out your savings yourself, or go to our website, www.guidetohealthplans.org, and right there on the homepage, you don't need to sign in. It doesn't matter whether you've already signed up to subscribe or whether your agency has. You can pop up the table that says, here are the plans not to join for self plus one because their self plus one premiums are higher. But you're probably not in one of those plans. So, hey, just go do it.
Well, I'm looking here, and as you pointed out, the variety of prices here is all over the place with these health plans, and they're experience rated. They know who their members are. They know who the heavy users are. They know who the non-heavy users. But in some of them, the family plan is actually slightly cheaper than the self plus one. Mm-hmm. And at the other end of the spectrum, I'm looking at the MDIPA high option here, and the annual premium to you that you will pay as head of a family is $8,800, whereas if you switch to self plus one, it's $3,700, a $5,000 savings just making that one switch.
So if you're in that plan, MDIPA family option, and you are a couple, or, a single parent with one child, for heaven's sake, switch to self plus one. There's a lot of money at stake.
And looking at Blue Cross, Care First Blue Cross, $5,000 versus $3,700. So, again, a substantial savings for people.
Yeah. Some of them are in the $1,000 plus range. Most of them are in the $100, $200 range. But, hey, what's to sneeze at? Saving a couple hundred bucks.
What you said earlier, if I was a federal worker retiree, I'm not involved in this particular open enrollment period because it doesn't behoove me to switch to a self plus one plan for a variety of reasons. But what you said earlier in the program, that maybe half the people are, and I'm putting words in your mouth, but maybe half the people are in the wrong plan.
Wrong is maybe a stronger word than I'd want to use. Let's put it this way. If you're in a plan where you pay more,
you're paying too much.
You're paying, in terms of premium, you're paying too much, but you're doing it because your family doctor is in that particular plan and not in the other one. Well, that's a good reason not to,
of course,
save, to try to save the last penny in premium dollars. But we're talking about thousands of dollars. And you could even, taking that same example, you could have, during open season, switched to the lower premium plan and paid your doctor just out of your wallet, and a few hundred dollars, and still been a lot of money ahead. So what happens is most people don't pay attention, okay? They stick with a name brand. They stick with the plan they've been in forever. They'd rather watch a Redskins game than switch health plans and go through that torture. And I agree with them. I'd rather watch a Redskins game than go through the torture of looking at health plans. But if they do spend a little time and effort, and of course, that's why our guide, maybe the main benefit of our guide is not that we tell you how much you're going to save in plan A compared to plan B, but we make the comparison so easy. Okay. Yeah. We just use, 5 minutes plus.
Yeah. Well,
you get an answer. Okay.
And I like the book. I like the book. I know you prefer the online, and it's better in many ways. But you could just open up the book, and it'll tell you what your premium is going to be for that year, and then the odds of what your out of pocket costs are going to be. The other thing, maybe to discuss here, which I think you've from time to time said is probably the most important reason to have health insurance, and that's for catastrophic coverage. What does that mean?
That's the limit. All plans have it. It's sometimes called maximum out-of-pocket, MOOP.
Mm-hmm.
Maximum
out-of-pocket, I guess. Yeah.
Maximum out-of-pocket. The most that you can be out-of-pocket in dollars in a given plan. That is, let's say you run up $100,000 in medical bills. Mm-hmm. The plan pays 80%, you're going to be out of pocket $20,000. But the plan has a special limit that says, well, wait a minute, if your share goes above $10,000, we'll pay all the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's typically an amount for self-only enrollment of somewhere $6,000, $8,000, that kind of range. And for family, typically $12,000, $14,000, somewhere in that kind of range. Sometimes lower, okay? A lot of plans, it's $10,000 for family and $5,000 for self-only. So you're given that guarantee that no matter what, you'll be money, you'll never have to pay more than that guarantee. Now, the point of this is there are some plans where the MOOP is enough better than it is in other plans that if you are pretty sure that you've got big health problems that may lead to high expenses, you might pay a little extra in premium to join the plan with that better guarantee. The most you can be out of pocket.
Well, I always like to be the dark cloud with the silver lining, but people are always talking about their health, some catastrophic illness, but you could be hit being in an auto accident. Same effect.
Yeah, hit by a truck.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
Okay, and you and your wife could both be hit by a truck.
Okay. All right. Well, just to sum up, thank you so much for being here, and we'll see you here again next week. Be careful. Have a good week.